And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, going to do things a little bit different. I'm working off of a four CD set of poems called Poets on Records. Poets on Record, 98 Poets Read Their Own Work, 1888 to 2006. In a selection from Disc 1, I might mention too, this was a gift to me from Alice, and I would like to thank her for that. You'll hear readings in this first hour from about 17 poets, I think, and from Disc 1. The list will include, tight show today. I'm just going to go ahead and play them, but... Well, let's do this. The list does include, among others, Dorothy Parker, Edgar Lee Masters, Edna St. Vincent Millay, Elizabeth Bishop, Gertrude Stein, Ogden Nash, Ezra Pound, Robert Frost, T.S. Eliot, William Butler Yeats, and William Carlos Williams. In the second hour, I'm going to just go ahead and play about 15 poets from Disc 2. That list will include Anne Sexton, Denise Levertov, Dylan Thomas, Jack Kerouac, John Ashbery, Robert Lowell, William Stafford, and Muriel Rykauser. These poets were mostly prevalent in the early 1900s to the mid probably more towards the mid-1900s, though. And then I'm going to do Disc 3 and 4 next week, and that will take us into the later 1900s and very early 2000s. So there are way too many poets for me on those two discs to air in a two-hour show. So I had to curate a little bit, and I chose the ones that were the that I thought might... The technology, these weren't mastered, so I chose the ones that might be a little bit come across the radio now in a little more pristine way, I guess. And also just I had to fit everything in. Anyway, it was hard to choose. Anyway, let's go ahead and start out. And I'm just going to, in between each poet, I'm going to read, if I have time, I think there's enough of a break, who read and who's going to read next. So coming up first, here is Dorothy Parker.
The Lady's Reward. Lady, lady, never start conversation toward your heart. Keep your pretty words serene. Never murmur what you mean. Show yourself by word and look, swift and shallow as a brook. Be as cool and quick to go as a drop of April snow. Be as transient and as gay as a cherry flower in May. Lady, lady, never speak of the tears that burn your cheek. She will never win him whose words had shown she feared to lose. Be you wise and never sad, you will get your lovely lad. Never serious be nor true, and your wish will come to you. And if that makes you happy, kid, you'll be the first it ever did.
Lucinda Matlock.
Sorry about this. Let's try this over again.
Lucinda.
As freedom.
Lucinda Matlock.
This is Edgar Lee Masters.
I went to the dances at Chandlerville and played snap-out at Winchester. One time we changed partners, driving home in the moonlight of middle June. And then I found Davis. We were married and lived together for 70 years, enjoying working, raising the 12 children, 8 of whom we lost ere I'd reached the age of 60. I spun, I wove, I kept the house, I nursed the sick. I made the garden and for holiday rambled over the fields, or sang the larks and by Spoon River, gathering many a shell and many a flower and medicinal weed. Shouting to the wooded hills, singing to the green valleys. At 96, I lived enough that is all in past to a sweet repose. What is this I hear of sorrow and weariness? anger, discontent, and drooping hopes. Degenerate sons and daughters, life is too strong for you. It takes life to love life. Emily Sparks from Spoon River Anthology. Where is my boy, in what far part of the world? The boy I love best of all in the school. I, the teacher, the old maid, the virgin heart, who made them all my children. Did I know my boy aright, thinking of him as spirit of flame, active ever aspiring? Oh, boy, boy, for whom I prayed and prayed. In many a watchful hour at night, do you remember the letter I wrote you of the beautiful love of Christ? And whether you ever took it or not, my boy, wherever you are, work for your soul's sake, that all of the clay of you, all of the dross of you, may yield to the fire of you, till the fire is nothing but light, nothing but light.
And you just heard Edgar Lee Masters. Up next, two poems by Edna Vincent Millay.
We were very tired. We were very merry. We were very tired. We were very merry. We had gone back and forth all night on the ferry. It was bare and bright and smelled like a stable. But we looked into a fire. We leaned across a table. We lay on a hilltop underneath the moon. And the whistles kept blowing and the dawn came soon. We were very tired. We were very merry. We had gone back and forth all night on the ferry. And you ate an apple and I ate a pear. From a dozen of each we had bought somewhere. And the sky went wan and the wind came cold. And the sun rose dripping a bucket full of gold. We were very tired. We were very merry. We had gone back and forth all night on the ferry. We hailed, "Good morrow, mother," to a shawl-covered head and bought a morning paper, which neither of us read. And she wept, "God bless you," for the apples and pears. And we gave her all our money but our subway fares. Love is not all. Love is not all. It is not meat, nor drink, nor slumber, nor a roof against the rain, nor yet a floating spar to men that sink and rise and sink and rise and sink again. Love cannot fill the thickened lung with breath, nor clean the blood, nor set the fractured bone. Yet many a man is making friends with death, even as I speak, for lack of love alone. It well may be that in a difficult hour, pinned down by pain and moaning for release, or nagged by want past resolution's power, I might be driven to sell your love for peace, or trade the memory of this night for food. It well may be. I do not think I would.
And you just heard Edna St. Vincent Millay. Up next, two poems by Elizabeth Bishop.
From a magician's midnight sleeve, the radio singers distribute all their love songs over the dew-wet lawns. And like a fortune teller's, their marrow-piercing guesses are whatever you believe. But on the Navy Yard aerial, I find better witnesses for love on summer nights. Five remote red lights keep their nests there, phoenixes burning quietly, where the dew cannot climb. I caught a tremendous fish and held him beside the boat half out of water, with my hook fast in the corner of his mouth. He didn't fight. He hadn't fought at all. He hung a grunting weight, battered and venerable and homely. Here and there, his brown skin hung in strips like ancient wallpaper, and its pattern of darker brown was like wallpaper, shapes like full-blown roses, stained and lost through age. He was speckled with barnacles, fine rosettes of lime, and infested with tiny white sea lice, and underneath two or three rags of green weed hung down. While his gills were breathing in the terrible oxygen, frightening gills, fresh and crisp with blood that can cut so badly, I thought of the coarse white flesh packed in like feathers, the big bones and the little bones, the dramatic reds and blacks of his shiny entrails, and the pink swim bladder like a big peony. I looked into his eyes, which were far larger than mine, but shallower and yellowed, the irises backed and packed with tarnished tinfoil seen through lenses of old scratched isinglass. They shifted a little, but not to return my stare. It was more like the tipping of an object toward the light. I admired his sullen face, the mechanism of his jaw, and then I saw that from his lower lip, if you could call it a lip, grim, wet, and weapon-like, hung five old pieces of fish line, or four, and a wire leader with the swivel still attached, with all their five big hooks grown firmly in his mouth. A green line, frayed at the end where he broke it, two heavier lines, and a fine black thread still crimped from the strain and snap when it broke and he got away. Like medals with their ribbons frayed and wavering, the five-haired beard of wisdom trailing from his aching jaw. I stared and stared, and victory filled up the little rented boat. From the pool of bilge where oil had spread a rainbow around the rusted engine, to the baler rusted orange, the sun-cracked thwarts, the oarlocks on their strings, the gunnels, until everything was rainbow, rainbow, rainbow. And I let the fish go.
And you just heard two poems by Elizabeth Bishop. Coming up next, you're going to hear a poem by Gertrude Stein.
If I told him a completed portrait of Picasso, if I told him, would he like it? Would he like it if I told him? Would he like it? Would Napoleon? Would he like it? If Napoleon, if I told him, would he like it if I told him? Would he like it if Napoleon, if I told him? If I told him, if Napoleon, if I told him? If I told him, would he like it? Would he like it if I told him? Now, not now, and now. Now, exactly as kings. Feeling full for it, exactitude as kings. So to beseech you as full as for it, exactly or as kings. Shutters shut and open, so do queens. Shutters shut and shutters, and so shutters shut and shutters, and so shutters, and so shutters shut, and so shutters shut, and shutters, and so shutters shut, and also, and so, and also. Exact resemblance to exact resemblance, the exact resemblance, exact as a resemblance. Exactly as resembling, exactly in resemblance, exactly a resemblance, exactly and resemblance. For this is so, because. Now actively repeat it all. Have, hold, and hear, actively repeat it all. I judge. As a resemblance to him. Who comes first? Napoleon the first. Who comes to? Coming to. Who goes there? As they go, they share. Who shares all? All is as all, as yet or as yet. Now to date. Now and date and the date. Who came first? Napoleon at first. Who came first? Napoleon the first. Who came first? Napoleon first. Presently. Exactly do they do. First exactly. Exactly do they do too. First exactly. And first exactly. Exactly do they do. And first exactly and exactly. And do they do. At first exactly and first exactly and do they do. The first exactly. And do they do the first exactly, at first exactly, first as exactly, at first as exactly, presently, as presently. He, and he, and as he, and as he, and he. He is, and as he is, and he is. He is, and as he, and he, and as he is, and he. And he, and he, Can curls rob? Can curls quote quotable? As presently, as exactitude, as trains, has trains, has trains, as trains, as trains presently, proportions presently, as proportions as presently, father and father, was the king or room, father and weather, was there, what was there, what was there was there, whether and in there, as even say so, one I land, two I land, three the land, three the land, three the land, two I land, one I land, two I land, as a so, they cannot, a note, they cannot, afloat, they cannot, they dote, they cannot, they as denote, miracles play, play fairly well, a well, as or as presently. Let me recite what history teaches, history teaches.
And you just heard Gertrude Stein. Coming up next, a poem by H.D.
Helen is, of course, that Helen of Sparta, Helen of Troy, Helena, hated of Greece. In a dream or trance, she left Troy. She finds herself in Egypt. How? Why? She does not know until the image of a lost and shipwrecked Achilles appears. Few were the words we said, nor knew each other, nor asked. Are you spirit? Are you sister? Are you brother? Are you alive? Are you dead? The harpers will sing forever of how Achilles met Helen among the shades. But we were not, we are not shadows, as we walk heel and soul, leave our sandal prints in the sand. Though the wound that heals treads lightly, and more lightly follow the purple sandal. Then Helen tries to disguise herself, to hide from Achilles, but she does not succeed. He recognizes. How could I hide my eyes? How could I veil my face with ash or charcoal from the embers? I drew out a blackened stick, but he snatched it. He flung it back. What sort of enchantment is this? What art will you yield with a faggot? Are you Hecate? Are you a witch? A vulture? A hieroglyph? The sign or the name of a goddess? What sort of goddess is this? Where are we? Who are you? Where is this desolate coast? Who am I? Am I a ghost? You are living, O child of Thetis, as you never lived before. Then he caught at my wrist, Helen, accursed of Greece. I have seen you upon the ramparts. No art is beneath your power. You stole the chosen, the flower of all time, of all history, my children, my legions. For you were the ships burnt, O cursed, O envious Isis, you. You, a vulture, a hieroglyph. Zeus be my witness, I said. It was he, Amen, dreamed of all this phantasmagoria of Troy. It was dream and a fantasy. Oh, Thetis, oh, sea mother, I prayed as he clutched my throat with his fingers, remorseless steel. Let me go out. Let me forget. Let me be lost. Oh, Thetis, oh, sea mother, I prayed under his cloak. Let me remember. Remember forever this star in the night.
And you just heard a poem by H.D. Coming up next, a poem, let me double check. Yeah, just a poem by Ogden Nash. Here we go.
This is Ogden Nash reading Portrait of the Artist as a Prematurely Old Man. It is common knowledge to every schoolboy and even to every bachelor of arts that all sin is divided into two parts. One kind of sin is called a sin of commission, and that is very important. And it is what you are doing when you are doing something you oughtn't. And the other kind of sin is just the opposite and is called a sin of omission, and is equally bad in the eyes of all right-thinking people from Billy Sunday to Buddha. And it consists of not having done something you shoulda. I might as well give you my opinion of these two kinds of sin, as long as in a way against each other we are pitting them. And that is, don't bother your head about sins of commission, because however sinful, they must at least be fun, or else you wouldn't be committing them. It is the sin of omission, the second kind of sin, that lays eggs under your skin. The way you get really painfully bitten is by the insurance you haven't taken out, and the checks you haven't added up the stubs of, and the appointments you haven't kept, and the bills you haven't paid, and the letters you haven't written. Also, about sins of omission, there is one particularly painful lack of beauty. Namely, it isn't as though it had been a riotous red-letter day or night every time you neglected to do your duty. You didn't get a wicked, forbidden thrill every time you let a policy lapse or forgot to pay a bill. You didn't slap the lads in the tavern on the back and loudly cry, "Whee! Let's all fail to write just one more letter before we go home, and this round of unwritten letters is on me." No, you never get any fun out of the things you haven't done. But they are the things that I do not like to be amid, because the suitable things that you didn't do give you a lot more trouble than the unsuitable things you did. The moral is that it is probably better not to sin at all, but if some kind of sin you must be pursuing, well, remember to do it by doing rather than by not doing.
And you just, that poem was by Ogden Nash. Coming up next, you're going to hear a poem by Ezra Pound.
Here we go. The age demanded an image of its accelerated grimace, something for the modern stage, not at any rate an attic grace. Not certainly the obscure reveries of the inward gaze. Better mendacities than the classics in paraphrase. The age demanded chiefly a mold in plaster made with no loss of time. A prose kinema. Not assuredly alabaster. Of the sculpture of rhyme. These fought in any case, and some believing, pro domo in any case. Some quick to arm, some for adventure, some from fear of weakness, some from fear of censure, some for love of slaughter, in imagination, learning later, some in fear, learning the love of slaughter. Died some pro patria, non dulce, non et decor, walked I deep in hell, believing in old men's lies, then unbelieving, came home to a lie, home to many deceits, home to old lies and new infamy, usury age old and age thick, and liars in public places. Daring as never before, wastage as never before, young blood and high blood, fair cheeks and fine bodies. Fortitude as never before, frankness as never before, disillusions as never told in the old days, hysterias, trench confessions, laughter out of dead bellies. There died a myriad into the best among them for an old bitch gone in the teeth. For a botched civilization, charm, smiling at the good mouth, quick eyes gone under earth's lid, for too gross of broken statues, for a few thousand battered books.
And you just heard a reading by Ezra Pound. Up next, you're going to hear a poem by Robert Graves. Here we go.
There's one story, and one story only, that will prove worth your telling, whether as learned bard or gifted child. To it, all lines or lesser gauds belong, that startle with their shining such common stories as they stray into. Is it of trees you tell, their months and virtues, of strange beasts that beset you, of birds that croak at you the triple will, or of the zodiac and how slow it turns below the boreal crown, prison of all true kings that ever reigned? Water to water, arc again to arc, from woman back to woman, so each new victim treads unfalteringly the never-altered circuit of his fate, bringing 12 peers as witness both to his starry rise and starry fall. Or is it of the virgin's silver beauty, all fish below the thighs? She in her left hand bears a leafy quince. When with her right she crooks a finger, smiling, how may the king hold back? Royally then he barters life for love. Or of the undying snake from chaos hatched, whose coils contain the ocean, into whose chops with naked sword he springs, then in black water, tangled by the reeds, battles 3 days and nights, to be spewed up beside her scalloped shore. Much snow is falling, winds roar hollowly, the owl hoots from the elder, fear in your heart cries to the loving cup, sorrow to sorrow as the sparks fly upward. The log groans and confesses, there is one story and one story only. Dwell on her graciousness, dwell on her smiling. Do not forget what flowers the great boar trampled down in ivy time. Her brow was creamy as the crested wave, her sea-blue eyes were wild, but nothing promised that is not performed.
And you just heard a poem by Robert Graves. Coming up next, two poems by Robert Frost. Here we go.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Stopping by woods on a snowy evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near between the woods and frozen lake the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep.
And you just heard two poems by Robert Frost. Coming up next, a poem by Stanley Kunitz.
The opening of the Battle of Gettysburg. They came on to Fishhook Gettysburg in this way, after this fashion, over hot pikes heavy with pollen, past fields where the wheat was high.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I've got the wrong reading up here. Let's try this again. Here is Stanley Kunitz. How's it? Here we go.
If the water were clear enough, if the water were still, but the water is not clear, the water is not still, you would see yourself slipped out of your skin, nosing upstream, slapping, thrashing, tumbling over the rocks till you paint them with your belly's blood. Finned ego, yard of muscle that coils, uncoils. If the knowledge were given you, but it is not given, for the membrane is clouded with self-deceptions, and the iridescent image swims through a mirror that flows, you would surprise yourself in that other flesh, heavy with milt, bruised, battering towards the dam that lips the orgiastic pool. Come, bathe in these waters, increase and die. If the power were granted you to break out of your cells, but the imagination fails and the doors of the senses close on the child within, you would dare to be changed as you are changing now into the shape you dread beyond the merely human. A dry fire eats you. Fat drips from your bones. The flutes of your gills discolor. You have become a ship for parasites. The great clock of your life is slowing down, and the small clocks run wild. For this you were born. You have cried to the wind and heard the wind's reply. I did not choose the way chose me. You have tasted the fire on your tongue till it is swollen black with a prophetic joy. Burn with me. The only music is time. The only dance is love. If the heart were pure enough, but it is not pure, you would admit that nothing compels you anymore. Nothing at all abides but nostalgia and desire, the two-way ladder between heaven and hell. On the threshold of the last mystery, at the brute absolute hour, you have looked into the eyes of your creature self, which are glazed with madness, and you say, he is not broken, but endures, limber and firm, in the state of his shining, forever inheriting his salt kingdom, from which he is banished forever.
And you just heard a poem by Stanley Kunitz. Up next, and the one that I started to play incorrectly a couple of minutes ago, up next is a poem by Stephen Vincent Benet. Here we go.
The opening of the Battle of Gettysburg. They came on to Fishhook Gettysburg in this way, after this fashion, over hot pikes heavy with pollen, past fields where the wheat was high. Peaches grew in the orchards. It was a fertile country, full of red barns and fresh springs and dun, deep-uddered kine. A farmer lived with a clear stream that ran through his very house room. They cooled the butter in it and the milk in their wide stone jars. A dusty Georgian came there to eat and go on to battle. They dipped the milk from the jars. It was cold and sweet in his mouth. He heard the clear stream's music as the German housewife served him, remembering the Shenandoah and a stream poured from a rock. He ate and drank and went on to the gun wheels crushing the harvest. It was a thing you remembered as long as any guns. Country of broad-backed horses, stone houses and long green meadows, where Getty came with his ox team to found a steady town. And the little trains of my boyhood puffed solemnly up the valley, past the market squares and the lindens and the Quaker meeting house. Penn stood under his oak with a painted sachem beside him. The market women sold scrapple when the first red maples turned. When the buckeyes slipped from their sheaves, you could gather a pile of buckeyes, red-brown as old polished boots, good to touch and hold in the hand. The ice cream parlor was papered with scenes from Paul and Virginia. The pigs were fat all year. You could stand a spoon in the cream. Penn stood under his oak with a feathered pipe in his fingers. His eyes were quiet with God, but his wits and his bargain sharp. So I remember it all, and the light sound of buckeyes falling in the worn rose bricks of the pavement, herring-boned, trodden for years, the great yellow shocks of wheat, and the dust-white road through summer, and in fall, the green walnut shells, and the stain they left for a while. So I remember you, ripe country of broad-backed horses, valley of cold, sweet springs, and dairies with limestone floors. And so they found you that year, when they scared your cows with their cannon, and the strange south moved against you, lean marchers lost in the corn.
And you just heard a poem by Stephen Vincent Benet. Up next, a single poem, it looks like again, by Sterling Brown. Here we go.
And this is the poem that I always close every reading of mine. After this poem, I read no more. Strong men. Strong men. The strong men keep coming on. Carl Sandburg. They dragged you from homeland. They chained you in coffles. They huddled you, spoon fashion, in filthy hatches. They sold you to give a few gentlemen ease. They broke you in like oxen, they scourged you, they branded you, they made your women breeders, they swelled your numbers with bastards, they taught you the religion they disgraced. You sang, keep inching along like a poe-inch worm. You sang, by and by I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. You sang, walk together, chillen, don't you get weary. The strong men keep a-coming on, the strong men get stronger. They point with pride to the road you built for them. They ride in comfort over the rails you laid for them. They put hammers in your hands and said, drive so much before sundown. You sang, ain't no hammer in this land. Strikes like mine, baby, strikes like mine. They cooped you in their kitchen, they penned you in their factories. They gave you the jobs that they were too good for. They tried to guarantee happiness to themselves by shunting dirt and misery to you. You sang, me and my baby gonna shine, shine, me and my baby gonna shine. The strong men keep a-coming on, the strong men get stronger. They bought off some of your leaders. You stumbled, as blind men will. They coaxed you unwontedly soft-voiced. You followed away, then laughed as usual. They heard the laugh and wondered, uncomfortable, unadmitting a deeper terror. The strong men keep a-coming on, getting stronger. What from the slums where they have hemmed you? What from the tiny huts they could not keep from you? What reaches them, making them ill at ease, fearful? Today they shout prohibitions at you. Thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, reserved for whites only. You laugh. One thing they cannot prohibit, the strong men coming on, the strong men getting stronger, strong men stronger.
And you just heard a poem by Sterling Brown. Up next, two poems by Theodore Retke. Here we go.
I knew a woman. I knew a woman, lovely in her bones. When small birds sighed, she would sigh back at them. Ah, when she moved more ways than one. The shapes a bright container can contain. Of her choice virtues only God should speak, or English poets who grew up on Greek. I'd have them sing in chorus, cheek to cheek. How well her wishes went. She stroked my chin. She taught me turn and counterturn and stand. She taught me touch that undulant white skin. I nibbled meekly from her proffered hand. She was a sickle, I, poor I, the rake, coming behind her for her pretty sake. But what prodigious mowing we did make. Love likes a gander and adores a goose. Her full lips pursed, the errand note to seize. She played it quick, she played it light and loose. My eyes, they dazzled at her flowing knees. Her several parts could keep a pure repose, or one hip quiver with a mobile nose. She moved in circles, and those circles moved. Let seed be grass, and grass turn into hay. I'm martyr to emotion not my own. What's freedom for? To know eternity. I swear she cast a shadow white as stone. But who would count eternity in days? These old bones live to learn her wanton ways. I measure time by how a body sways.
I remember the neck curls limp and damp as tendrils, and her quick look of sidelong pickerel's smile, and how once startled into talk the light syllables leap for, and she balanced in the delight of her thought a wren happy tail into the wind, her song trembling the twigs and small branches. The shades sang with her, the leaves, their whispers turned to kissing, and the moles sang in the bleached valleys under the rose. Oh, when she was sad, she cast herself down into such a pure depth, even a father could not find her, scraping her cheek against straw, stirring the clearest water. My sparrow, you are not here, waiting like a fern, making a spiny shadow. The sides of wet stones cannot console me, or the moss wound with the last light. If only I could nudge you from this sleep, my maimed darling, my skittery pigeon. Over this damned grave I speak the words of my love. I with no rights in this matter, neither father nor lover.
And you just heard two poems by Theodore Retke. Next, you're going to hear a poem by T.S. Eliot.
There's no significance in these four poems being called aerial poems. They were merely contributed to a series of new poems by various poets called the Aerial Series, which were offered with illustrations during those 4 years to the public as a kind of highbrow Christmas card. So these were written for 4 successive Christmas seasons. I shall read Journey of the Magi. A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey. The ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. And the camels cold, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. there were times, we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women and the night fires going out and the lack of shelters and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end, we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears, saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a watermill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wine skins. But there was no information, and so we continued and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago. I remember, and I would do it again, but set down this, where we led all that way for birth or death. There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death.
And you just heard a poem by T.S. Eliot. Coming up next, two poems by William Butler Yeats. Here we go.
I'm going to read my poems with great emphasis upon their rhythm. And that may seem strange if you are not used to it. I remember the great English poet, William Morris, coming in a rage out of some lecture hall where somebody had recited a passage out of his Sigurd of Alstong. It gave me a devil of a lot of trouble, said Morris, to get that thing into verse. It gave me the devil of a lot of trouble to get into verse the poems that I am going to read, and that is why I will not read them as if they were prose. I am going to begin with a poem of mine called The Lake Isle of Innisfree. Because if you know anything about me, you will expect me to begin with it. It is the only poem of mine which is very widely known. When I was a young lad in the town of Sligo, I read Porro's essays and wanted to live in a hut on an island in Loch Gill called Innisfree, which means Heather Island. I wrote the poem in London when I was about 23. One day in the Strand, I heard a little tinkle of water and saw on a shop window a little jet of water balancing a ball on the top. It was an advertisement, I think, of cooling drinks, but it set me thinking of Sligo and Lake Water. I think there is only one obscurity in the poem. I speak of noon as a purple glow. I must have meant by that the reflection of heather in the water. I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. Nine bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honey bee, and live alone in the bee loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow,
dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer and noon a purple glow, and evening full of brilliant wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavements grey, I hear it in the deep harp's core. I rise in the dawn and I kneel and blow to the seat of the fire, flicker and glow. And then I must scrub and bake and sweep till stars are beginning to blink and peep. But the young lie long and dream in their bed of the matching of ribbons for bosom and head. Their day goes over in idleness. They sigh if the wind but lift up a tress, while I must work because I am old, and the seed of the fire gets feeble and cold.
And you just heard two poems by William Butler Yeats. I'm going to go ahead, and I've got enough time in this hour. I'm going to backtrack here a couple of poems to an excerpt of America by Walt Whitman. It's just a short piece of a poem. I originally didn't include it because, as I recall, the recording is kind of difficult to understand or hear, but... Walt Whitman was an important enough poet, I think, to be included in this hour. So here we go. A poem, again, America, an excerpt of it by Walt Whitman.
America, center of equal daughters, equal sons, all alike and dear, grown, ungrown, young or old, strong, ample, fair, enduring, capable, rich, perennial with the earth, with freedom, law, and love.
And that was Walt Whitman. And for a final poem in this first hour off of this first disc, here is, and I think it's just a single poem, I believe, here, yeah. Here is Walt, I'm sorry, just did that. William Carlos Williams. Here we go.
To Elsie. The pure products of America go crazy. Mountain folk from Kentucky, or the ribbed north end of Jersey with its isolate lakes and valleys, its deaf mutes, thieves, old names, and promiscuity between devil-may-care men who have taken to railroading out of sheer lust of adventure, and young slatterns bathed in filth from Monday to Saturday, to be tricked out that night with gauds from imaginations which have no peasant traditions to give them character, but flutter and flaunt sheer rags, succumbing without emotion save dumb terror, under some hedge of chokecherry or viburnum, which they cannot express, unless it be that marriage, perhaps with a dash of Indian blood, will throw up a girl so desolate, so hemmed round with disease or murder, that she'll be rescued by an agent, reared by the state, and sent out at 15 to work in some hard-pressed house in the suburbs, some doctor's family, some Elsie. Voluptuous water, expressing with broken brain the truth about us, her great ungainly hips and flopping breasts addressed to cheap jewelry and rich young men with fine eyes, as if the earth under our feet were an excrement of some sky, and we degraded prisoners destined to hunger until we eat filth, while the imagination strains after deer going by fields of goldenrod in the stifling heat of September. Somehow it seems to destroy us. It is only an isolate flex that something is given off. No one to witness and adjust. no one to drive the car.
And again, that was William Carlos Williams. You just heard in this hour from a 4-CD set of poems called Poets on Record, 98 Poets Read Their Work, 1888 to 2006. And in a selection from Disc 1, you heard, I think it was 17, maybe 18 poets, if I count the one I just added, mostly from the early, I guess, to mid 1900s. As you could tell, the readings were not mastered. All were actual recordings in their own time. The list did include, it's Dorothy Parker, Edgar Lee Masters, Edna St. Vincent Millay, Elizabeth Bishop, Gertrude Stein, Ogden Nash, Ezra Pound, Robert Frost, T.S. Eliot, William Butler Yeats, Walt Whitman, William Carlos Williams. Let's see who I forgot here. I don't know if I mentioned Sterling Brown in there. Stanley Kunitz. Also James Wright. That's coming up next. Ezra Pound. I think I've got just, I may not have gotten Theodore Ritke. I think I got everybody else in there anyway. What I'm going to do is let's do this, and I'll just be right back. And then I'll tell you if you enjoyed this, stick around for the second hour because there's more, and a bit later, a bit more like mid, strictly mid 1900s. Here we go. Let's do this first.
Hey, hey, hey. You want to kick the summer heat and get a nice treat? Don't hesitate to make a date to visit Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at Old Farm FF to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
I've never met a dal I didn't like. If you are a fan of dal or lentil curry too, listen to The Dal Project on CFRC 101.9 FM, Thursdays from 5:30 to 6 p.m. Join me, Sayada, in learning to cook many kinds of dal or lentil curry from across the South Asian diaspora while talking about culture, migration, and memory.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And it is about 1 minute before the top of the hour and the start of the second hour. So what I'll do is just want to give you a quick reminder that every week I upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years. I usually get them uploaded just before 7 o'clock in the evening, but